And we're off and running on a Wednesday morning edition here midweek on My Car Guru, and Lenny Lawson is here in studio.
Yes, sir. We're trying to share enough information with folks so that they don't go out there and mess up. Today we're going to be talking about what happens when you wreck your car and how should you pick a body shop to fix it. I think this is probably one of the most important financial decisions that you will make with regards to your automotive investment. That's a pretty powerful statement, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
You can really screw up if you choose the wrong body shop.
I wonder if this is going to be as big a problem in the future now with the protective devices put on some of the newer cars, you know, to avoid collision.
Yeah.
And that kind of stuff.
You know, if all cars are being operated by computers, it's going to be interesting to see who's liable if they do run into each other. So if you're not driving your car, Tim, the car's driving itself. So in essence, if you're driving a Honda and it's driving itself, then is not Honda driving your car? You're not driving it. You're just a passenger.
You'd think, but I'm sure they consider you the operator of that car, even though you're not doing anything.
Well, you're probably liable,
yeah.
You know, since it's your car and you're in it, and you made the decision to take your hands off the steering wheel and trust the car.
Mm-hmm.
Wonder what kind of, if the manufacturer is going to make you sign a waiver when you have a car that will drive itself, that you, before it will activate on that particular car, there's this statement, this contract that appears on the infotainment system that you have to actually agree to before before you can drive the car.
Or make some kind of facial recognition or thumbprint or something like that, you know?
I mean, if you're driving down the road, you decide to make the decision, okay, I'm going to let the car drive itself. You're on I-75 and you're heading to Florida. And all of a sudden, the car decides to take a right turn into a guardrail. Whose fault was that?
That's just scary to think about. I mean, you'd think it'd be the car's fault.
I would totally agree. That's not the driver's fault.
No.
But I haven't, you know, there have been some discussions in Washington as to what they're going to do about that.
Yeah.
I mean, right now, there have been some very high-profile accidents with Tesla and going down the road and driving to a bridge abutment. And that's, you know, what happened in those cases? Is that handled secretly by Elon Musk and he gives them, you know, $1 billion just to keep your mouth shut? You know, he's got the money to do it. But yeah, I mean, it is something that needs to be thought through. I'm just not there. I can understand using, I love the adaptive cruise control feature on a car where the car maintains a safe distance from the car in front of it. And I don't have to be messing with my gas pedal all the time. So that's available on all new Nissans and Fords that we sell, where if you have adaptive cruise control, you just set the distance that is acceptable between you and the car in front of you. It gives you four different settings, basically. Short, medium, extra, or large, and extra large, okay?
Sounds like you're in the drive-thru lane somewhere.
Yeah. And so you just set that distance, and I don't normally set mine on number two. I go with the medium. And so, you know, that is makes a long drive less tiring, you know, where the car actually matches the speed to the car in front of it until, you know, you see a clear lane, you pull over, and if the car and all the cameras and stuff don't see anything out there, it accelerates back up to the speed that you had set on your cruise control.
So you don't have to flip the switch to turn the cruise control off or on, back off or on, or whatever.
Right. Okay. So, taking my hands off the steering wheel is a different thing altogether. Especially going 65 miles an hour around a curve. I'm in the middle lane, and there's a car on either side of me. And I'm trusting this car to do the driving for me. You know, what happens if that car to the left decides to can't see me and is a side view mirror? So, because he doesn't have blind spot monitoring, and I'm in his blind spot, and he decides to come over. What does my car do? Is my car also trained and programmed to handle unpredictable a collision avoidance maneuvers? I don't know.
Yeah. Especially if there's another, if it's a three lane, there's another car beside you.
Yeah. You know, I always thought that when they came up with hands-free driving, that there would be something embedded in the road. And all the cars would just follow that. You know, there would be like some kind of like the...
Like a monorail
thing. Yeah, kind of like the monorail thing, you know, where everybody's going down the road. You can eliminate so many traffic jams and issues if everybody just would stop at the same time and start at the same time. You know how you get into come to a traffic light and you have, you know, it turns green and the car in the very front takes off and then the car in the the next car hadn't finished his text message yet, you know, so he's still texting and he doesn't even know it's turned green. So he sits there and then people start honking their horn. You know, you get this slow kind of movement of vehicles, whereas if you have all the cars are connected to one another, they all start at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always talk about those big traffic jams whenever we go to the beach. To Hilton Head, we're on 26 or 95 or something, and you get these massive, like, 7-mile stops where you're just, like, stuck in it. It's like being on a parking lot. And then you get to the very end of it, mm-hmm. and it starts to break up, and there's nothing there.
Yeah.
There's no cars there.
Yeah.
I don't know where the accident cleared out or somebody just, you know, hit their brakes, and it started a chain reaction.
Mm-hmm.
I truly believe that happens. So it's just really also, Tim, about the sheer volume of cars that are on the road today.
It is, yeah.
You know, and I truly believe that the main culprit is the cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
Because you watch just about anybody that is addicted to their cell phone. When they stop for any reason, they're grabbing it and they're looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're looking to see if they got any text messages. They're looking to, you know, maybe look for directions. They're changing the station or what they were listening to or whatever. And it's just, it is something that the insurance companies hate and probably factor into their pricing, you know, on their insurance mm-hmm. premiums. And it's something that the body shops love.
Mm-hmm.
Because the more people that aren't paying attention, the more wrecked cars end up in their shops.
Why can't you wait until you get to your destination? Sometimes it's just, maybe you're only going 5 or 10 miles down the road, but you get a text. Why is it that most people can't wait to read that text?
I don't know. It's so accessible, probably.
Yeah.
You know, I think about what in the heck did I do before I had a cell phone where I could, every time there was a commercial break, I could look and, you know, I can look now and see what the news is. Mm-hmm. Has anything changed?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what has such and such done? Or
mm-hmm.
It is just, I mean, I find myself sitting there watching TV and I got an iPad in my lap just to fill in the commercial breaks or if I get bored and we're watching a Hallmark Channel.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really like Hallmark Channel shows. My wife loves them. But anyway, she's watching the show. She said, aren't you going to watch the show with me? I said, well, I am, kind of.
I can multitask.
But you wonder what you do at a time, and, you know, if you really think about it, you know, you just weren't, I mean, life wasn't some big, rosy, wonderful thing back in the 70s, was it? I mean, maybe we glamorize it a little bit, but, you know, we had plenty of faults and did things wrong, but when we were watching TV, we were watching TV, right?
Right.
Or we were reading a magazine.
Well, to me, it was better. I loved the 70s.
Did you?
Oh, yeah.
You're weird.
I loved the 70s. The music.
Dingo boots and bell-bottom button-up
flower shirts with leisure
big
suits.
Collars.
Yeah.
Big wide ties.
Sure, bell-bottom pants. I mean, I loved it.
Uh-huh.
I loved the 70s.
I don't, you know, it's, of course, there's a certain nostalgic, that's when we grew up, though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then when you look at folks who grew up in the 50s, they'll say they loved the 50s.
Sure.
Or the 60s. So.
You know, I thought 8-track tapes were cool at one time.
Yeah.
Well, they were cool. They were cool. You know, you thought, man, this is high tech.
It took up a lot of space, though.
They did. But this was high tech, you know.
Did you have an 8-track case?
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me too.
I too. The fake leather, you know, the plastic leather.
Yeah.
8-track case.
Naugahyde.
I don't know if it's Naga. I think it was just
genuine plastic. Simulated leather.
Simulated leather. Plastic, in other words.
But if you do ram into somebody, or somebody rams into you, I've got some advice about what to do to make sure you get a good repair and don't negatively impact the value of your car. And I'm going to share that with you right after this commercial break.
And we are back. It is My Car Guru for this Wednesday morning talking about what to do when you have a crash.
Well, really, I'm not going to talk about, like, the immediate aftermath of the accident.
Right.
You know, I'm going to talk about the next couple of very important decisions that you're going to make.
Right.
And getting good advice when it comes to where to take your car to get it fixed, it's a pretty big financial decision. If you want advice on that, I'll be glad to take your call and I'll give you a list of things that you need to be aware of. When somebody, I don't care if a deer hits your car or you hit a deer, which one, maybe a deer suicide attack or something like that.
Yeah, a lot of times it's the deer hitting your car, not the other way around.
One of my daughters said, Dad, why do they put these deer crossings where they do? They look like such crazy places. Why do the deer have to cross like here? Like we were in downtown Asheville and it said deer crossing.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, can the deer read I said, I think you got this wrong. I think this is a typical place where deers go across. I don't think it's like a designated deer crossing place where the deer have to cross.
Right. Well, they've run the numbers that maybe there's been more incidences of deer crossings there than in certain
areas. One of the times when your kid makes a comment from the back seat and you really just want to turn around and look at him and say, really?
You know? Yeah, my youngest daughter and I were on a little trip one time, and we went by this huge cemetery down near Greenville, South Carolina.
Yeah, I think I've seen it.
Yeah, it's right there. What do they call
25
it?
25.
White Horse or something, yeah. That little area. Uh-huh. 25, yeah. We went by there, and she looks over at it, and she looked at me, and she said, are all those people in that cemetery dead? I said, well, no. And of course, she was.
The ones that are walking around aren't.
She was 17, I think, at the time, and I said, well, no, some of them are still alive in there. They just put them in there to kind of store them away for a while.
Yeah. They're in homeostasis or whatever that is. They're getting ready to get on a spaceship.
Well, that was before Walking Dead was a big thing, yeah. You know.
Well, you know, car accidents happen. Mm-hmm. And when you hit a deer, you hit a another vehicle, comes into contact with your vehicle. What you see as far as damage is concerned typically isn't all the damage there is. For example, if you get hit in the left front fender, it's very likely, if you get hit hard enough and you're in a vehicle that has a unibody style of construction, you know, mm-hmm. the frame and the body are one,
mm-hmm.
then there are interior panels that are going to be damaged. One of the ways you can see that is just by opening the hood of the car and looking at that inner fender and seeing, you know, you can see where the suspension towers are just on either side of the engine. That basically, typically most front ends use a McPherson strut type of suspension, which is basically a tower
mm-hmm.
that has bolts on the top and connects to the wheel or the suspension on the bottom. It's a coil spring with a shock in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you get hit in the left front, and if it tweaks that even a slight bit, then your tires are going to wear unevenly from now on. Mm-hmm. Your car is not going to handle properly. This interior structure has to be fixed. You know, what gets cars totaled these days so much easier than they used to are headlights and airbags. Because headlight assemblies are so expensive. I talked to you the other day about a BMW. To replace the headlights that were defective on both sides is going to cost $7,000.
Hmm. That's incredible.
It's not unusual for them to be from $800 to $1,500 just for one headlight assembly.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't take that much. But let's say it's not that serious, but you do get hit in the left fender. So the fender comes off, there's damage underneath that as well. One of the things you want to make sure of is that you get a before and after measurement. You want to make sure that the body shop that is repairing your car has a laser measuring system.
Okay. Laser. Okay.
Now, back in the old days, they didn't have laser measuring systems. You know how when you go to the grocery store and you do the self-checkout thing, mm-hmm. and you got to aim your barcode. Yeah, at this screen. Well, there's a laser that's shooting up and reading that barcode.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what we do in the body shop business is we have this device that it's a computer and it's a laser that is basically mounted underneath the car. There are different places on the frame of the car where we can hang these little metal reflective targets all over the car.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like getting an MRI, okay, where you can see all inside all the mm-hmm. organs and bones and all that stuff. And, you know, certain things are supposed to be a certain amount of distance from each other,
mm-hmm.
right, when it's built from the factory. And all that's programmed into the system. These little metal targets reflect back to the laser, which interprets that information, sends it to the computer, and tells you if the left side is off by a few millimeters or a couple inches. Then you got to have frame work done. The vehicle has to be put on a frame machine, which has chains and big, gigantic pulleys and all kinds of intricate devices, and they pull that frame into shape. So what you want to see is a before and after. You want to make sure that when they're done with your car, that it is within factory specifications. That's all I'm going to say about that. So make sure that they have a laser measuring system,
mm-hmm.
and you want before and after readings of the actual measurements. You know, before they fixed it and after they fixed it. Okay.
Do many body shops now have laser?
Most good body shops do.
Okay.
ACT, Johnson City, a really big body shop mm-hmm. operation. Mm-hmm. Those guys do a great job. They're going to have the latest the greatest state-of-the-art stuff. I don't know a bunch of names of other body shops in the Tri-City.
Mm-hmm.
Gary Hosey, you know, Gary's Body Shop in Greenville, we used to have all that stuff. We're not really in the – we're in the customization. You know, we don't repair cars that have been wrecked anymore. We just build hot rods and you know, cars,
mm-hmm.
car projects. It's more fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's less demanding. Well, it's demanding, but it's, you know, less. So when they do those repairs on the inside of the car, they should make the inside repairs look like they are from the factory. One of the first things that I do when I go to the auction is if I think a car's had damage, I pull the hood and I'll look at the structure on the inside. You know, if I think it's been hit in the left rear quarter, I'll open up the trunk and I'll pull the mat away where I can see if the floor looks like if somebody's been beating on it with a hammer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because metal just doesn't just go back. You either have to cut it out, put new metal in, weld it back in, or you have to beat the crap out of it, okay,
mm-hmm.
and until it gets back into shape.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of body shops will not take the time to refinish those areas when they do it and make it look like it did from the factory. It can dramatically impact the value of your vehicle, a bad repair. Okay, so now we're talking structure. Let's move into the paint realm.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where you need a good body shop. I have a customer right now, whether he did it or we did it, he's got a new Shelby Mustang. And somehow it got a rock chip on it. Now, he kind of thinks we did it when it was in the shop. We kind of thought he did it. But regardless, it's on me. I'm fixing it, okay? We tried to touch it up, Tim, but it won't touch up. So this is the quarter pound. This is the rear fender. A lot of people may call it a rear fender. We call it a rear quarter panel. I don't know why they do, but that's what we do. It's over the rear wheel, you know, covers the, that's where the wheel well is. And sometimes there's a fuel filler there. Sometimes it's on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're having to paint that section. And I despise it. What we're going to do is just paint a small section, and we're going to put clear over the rest of it so that it's all very uniform.
Mm-hmm.
Now, most body shops, when they would fix this, would put tape along the inside of the door jamb. They would tape all the way around the quarter window and probably put tape around the gas door on the inside. But what that's going to do is going to leave paint marks. It's going to leave tape marks. And on an expensive car like that, you can't do that. So what we're doing is we're actually putting clear in the door jamb. We're taking the window out. It's a lot more expensive the way we're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a collector car, you know, and it has to be done right.
Mm-hmm.
And so making sure that when you're getting your car painted, that if they're painting the side of the car, that there will be no tape lines, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you have to tell them that. Say, I don't want to be able to feel any tape lines in my door jamb, around my gas door, and I don't want to see any paint. If you have to paint the side of this car, I want the window taken out,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want tape lines on my moldings. I want the moldings taken off. When they use tape, that's a shortcut, Tim, okay?
Yeah.
So you don't want them taking shortcuts. And then the other thing is just color match. You've got to find out what kind of paint they're going to be using and that, you know, the paint has to match, and it has to match in the shade, and it has to match out in the bright sun as well, or you're not going to accept it, okay?
Yeah.
Now, this is going to be a problem on pearl paints, anything that has a lot of metallic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's one reason not to buy those, not to buy pearl white. I love it. It looks beautiful. But if you ever wreck it, it's almost impossible to match the paint.
Mm-hmm.
Silvers are the same way.
Yeah.
So anyway, just some tips there.
All right.
There you go. We'll take our last break.
Okay. We'll be right back. All right, we're back here to wrap up this edition of My Car Guru here on this Wednesday morning.
I was following an old truck a couple months ago with Abby. We were going out to my mom's house, and we were on the Asheville Highway heading out there. And I said, Abby, look at that truck in front of us. You see anything unusual? She said, yeah, the front wheels don't line up with the rear wheels. I said, yeah, that's right. It looks like it's crabbing, you know, going sideways
yeah.
down the road. But what had happened, it had been hit. And either the front or the rear, and the frame is bent
mm-hmm.
on that vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
So when the front wheels are going doing one track and the rear wheels are doing another track, you can imagine what that would do to the wear on the tires and also just the handling of the car.
Yeah.
You know, the faster you go, the more magnified the errors become.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if you have a vehicle that's been improperly repaired and the suspension is messed up, then it's going to be a problem. I'm restoring doing a minor restoration on a 49 Buick right now, 49 Buick Roadmaster. We didn't like the way the rear end was mounted in. They started to take it out. And, Tim, the spring, when they loosened the bolt for one of the leaf springs, mm-hmm. the spring broke in half
mm.
and fell on the floor.
Wow.
And that was just after loosening a bolt. And you know what would happen to that rear end if you're going down the road and that spring broke?
Yeah.
That's, that whole suspension would turn, would drop back on one side and would run you right into the line of traffic that's coming the other way.
Sure, yeah.
And we were driving that car around. Okay, somebody was driving that car around for years, been driving that car.
Yeah.
And it was that close to a disaster.
Wow.
And so you just have to make sure that the place that you're doing business with knows what the heck they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you need any advice, feel free to call me anytime. My name's Lenny Lawson, and my phone number is 552-2020, and I'll be glad to help you out.
All right. There you go. That'll do it for this edition of My Car Guru. We'll talk again tomorrow.